is brought to you in part by Liberated Syndication, podcast publishing made easy, libsyn.com. That's libsyn.com.
Play ball!
This is the Radio Memories Sports Network, where the old heroes are live once more.
Welcome to the Baseball Historian, where the past comes alive through podcasting of baseball's greatest moments. Before we begin our program today, I'd like to ask if there's any comments or requests that you would send them to rmcomments@gmail.com. The Baseball Historian is a proud member of the Radio Memories Network, and we thank you for coming today. The umpire has thrown the ball to the pitcher, and it looks like the game is ready to begin. So let's begin this Baseball Historian. We are going to be looking at the 1936 World Series. In 1936, the New York Yankees were not only without their best player, but also perhaps the greatest player in the history of the game. Prior to 1935, the Yankees had released the legendary Babe Ruth, who went on to play briefly for the Boston Braves, and shortly thereafter retired from baseball. Many felt that the Babe was directly responsible for the Yankees' dominance in the 1920s and the 1930s, and the prospect of returning to postseason glory without him was grim. If New York would be able to prosper without Ruth in the lineup, it would be a tremendous boost for the future of the franchise. Ruth's replacement was an up-and-coming rookie outfielder named Joe DiMaggio, who hit 29 homers and 129 RBIs in his debut season, third only to Lou Gehrig and Bill Dickey. Joe D, as he would later be called, was a perfect fit for the old Bronx Bombers. Gehrig was coming off a Most Valuable Player season in which he hit 49 homers and drove in 152 with a batting average of .354. Dickey hit 22 homers with 107 RBIs and led the team with an RBI of .362. Pitching was also a major player in the Yankees' 1936 season, as six hurlers finished the regular season with double-digit wins. Their records included Red Ruffing with 20 and 12 with an ERA of 3.85, Monty Pearson 19 and 7 with an ERA of 3.71, Lefty Gomez 13 and 7 with an ERA of 4.38, Pat Malone 14 and 4 with an ERA of 3.80, and Johnny Branca 12 and 7 with an ERA of 4.24. Not only had New York proved themselves to be worthy without Ruth during the regular season, they were on the verge of a World Series streak that would last for the next 4 years. The Yankees' return to the series also coincided with the comeback of the National League champion New York Giants, who were returning to the big show after a three-year hiatus. Although the Giants did not share the dominant pennant run that the Yankees had, winning only 5 games, they did have the most dangerous pitcher in all of baseball, Carl Hubble. A 33-year-old lefty who had won his last 16 games and finished the season 26-6
with an ERA of 2.31. Hubbell had more than earned the start for Game 1 and went up against 20-game winner Red Ruffing, mid-season acquisition of Jake Powell, who came over from Washington, was obviously not intimidated by the Giants' giant and managed 3 base hits in his first 3 attempts. It mattered little as Ruth's replacement in right field, George Selkirk, scored the Yankees' only run with a homer in the 3rd inning. Hubbell struck out 8 and only allowed 7 hits, none of which flew past the infield, in his 6-1 opening lead. Despite the miserable debut, the Yankees went on to win 4 of the next 5 games, while paying back the Giants' pitching staff for Hubbell's performance in Game 2. They took Hal Schumacher and 4 relievers for 17 hits, including the 2nd Grand Slam in World Series history by Tony Lazzari. The entire lineup, all 9, had at least 1 hit and scored 1 run in the 18-4 massacre. Bill Dickey and Lazzari each had 5 runs batted in apiece. The following day, newly acquired Bump Hadley delivered a 2-1 victory with a tie-breaking run knocked in by Frank Crosetti in the 8th and a solid relief from Pat Malone in the 9th. Hubbell returned to seek revenge for his counterparts in Game 4. But suffered the same fate, allowing 4 Yankee runs, 2 off of Gehrig's 2nd homer, as in as many days, in the first 3 innings. Despite the best efforts, the Giants was bested 5-2 by Monty Pearson, a recent trade acquisition from Cleveland. On the brink of elimination, the Giants managed to stay alive with a 5-4 crucial win, 10th inning victory in Game 5. But it only postponed the obvious. Once again, the Yankees sluggers stepped up to the plate and blasted their crosstown rivals' pitching staff into an embarrassing 13-5 Game 6 romp. Powell, Lazzaretti, DiMaggio, and Ruff each had 3 hits, with Powell adding a homer and 4 RBIs as the Yankees wrapped up the Giants and another World Series title. In the end, the Yankees had finished the contest with an amazing 65 hits. Powell batted .455, DiMaggio batted .346, Gehrig knocked in 7 runs while boosting his RBI total in the series play to 31 in 25 games. The only highlight for their opponents came on the opening day as Hubbell's Game 1 masterpiece ended the newly crowned champion's 20-game winning streak. However, it would be of little consolation to the fallen Giants and to the rest of the National League, as the Yankees were about to start a new winning streak of a different kind. Now let's join the 1936 World Series in Game 3. The New York Giants, Freddie Fitzsimmons is the pitcher. New York Yankees are pitching Bump Hadley. The score of this game was a 2-1 victory for the Yankees, with Lou Gehrig scoring a home run, and the Giants were able to score a home run with Jimmy Ripple. A 2-1 victory for the Yankees in a good game. I'm going to play the entire game. It is about 2 hours long, and I do hope you enjoy and come again to the Baseball Historian.
Play ball!
The World Series is on the air. This is Ty Tyson broadcasting the play-by-play description of the 3rd game of the 1936 World Series from the Yankee Stadium, New York, through the networks of the National Broadcasting Company. The first 3 innings play-by-play will be described by Tom Manning of WTAM. The second 3 innings by Red Barber of WLW. And the last 3 by myself. But before the game starts, we wish to introduce to you at this time Warren Brown, sports expert of the Chicago Herald Examiner. Warren Brown, thanks.
Thank you, Ty. The World Series this afternoon comes to the Yankee Stadium, the home of the American League champions. The first appearance of the players here in this 1936 World Series, which is now deadlocked at 1 game each for Yankees and Giants. I'm going to turn this over now to Tom Manning, who will give you the lineup and get us going for this third game of the 1936 World Series.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This afternoon, of course, as Warren Brown told you, we are over at Yankee Stadium, an enormous structure. I'm going to give you just a bit of a picture of the field. Directly down the right field foul line, there is a little fence down there approximately 4 feet high. It is 296 feet to the corner. And then, of course, the wall slants off over in direct right field. It is 367 feet. In right center, about 407 feet, the wall is about 20 feet high. Directly from home plate, through the pitcher's box, out over second, direct center field, in other words, is 461 feet. In direct left field, it is 415 feet, with a barrier out there about 4 feet high. And the same dimension as in right field, about 295 feet to the direct left field corner. Now here we have the lineup of the afternoon. Warming up down in front of us for the American League New York Yankees is Irving Bump Hadley. Heavy set boy, he's a right-hander. On the other side of home plate, that's Freddie Fitzsimmons, also a right-hander. That's what it looks like at the moment. Hadley for the Yankees and Fitzsimmons for the Giants. The lineup for the Giants, Moore, left field, M-O-O-R-E. Martell, short, B-A-R-T-E-L-L. Terry, first, T-E-R-R-Y. Ox, right field, O-T-T. In center field, Ripple, R-I-P-P-L-E. Behind the bat, Mancuso, M-A-N-C-U-S-O. At second base, Whitehead, W-H-I-T-E-H-E-A-D. At third base will be Captain Jackson, J-A-C-K-S-O-N. And the pitcher, Fitzsimmons, F-I-T-Z-S-I-M-M-O-N-S. Now the Yankee lineup. Looking down on the field at the moment, the umpires are standing in front of the Yankee dugout, which is along third base. They have not come up to the plate yet, but they will in a moment. The lineups will be given the umpires by Lou Gehrig, the captain of the Yankees, and Travis Jackson, the captain of the Giants. Gehrig and Jackson are down there in a conference with the umpires, so I'll give you the Yankee lineup. It's Crosetti, short, C-R-O-S-E-T-T-I. Rolfe, third base, R-O-L-F-E. In center field, DiMaggio, D-I-M-A-G-G-I-O. At first base, Gehrig. Behind the bat, Dickey. In right field will be George Selkirk, S-E-L-K-I-R-K. In left field, Jakey Powell, P-O-W-E-L-L. At second base, Lazzeri, L-A-Z-Z-E-R-I. And the starting Yankee pitcher will be Hadley, H-A-D-L-E-Y. All right, here's the picture that we have. A capacity house here in Yankee Stadium. Yankee Stadium over in the Bronx is much larger than the Polo Ground. Yes, it's plenty larger. I believe that upwards of 65,000. We'll give you the exact figures a little later on in the afternoon. Looking down at the field now, the four umpires, Major Kurt and Furman of the National League, Geisel and Summers of the American League, are having a little conference about 20 feet on the third base side of home plate with Gehrig and Jackson. The photographers are leaving the field. Most of the New York Yankees, who are the home club today, they'll be wearing their white uniforms. Their uniform is striped in black. They have black caps on, black numerals, black stockings, and black caps. Today, the Giants, they have been wearing the white and blue uniforms during the first two games. They will occupy the first base dugout. They'll have their gray road uniform trimmed in very bright blue. The conference is still going on as we gaze about the Yankee Stadium here. It's a three-decker, you know. They have the main floor, the mezzanine, and then the upper balcony. The open bleachers out there that seat upwards of around 15, 18,000 people. Every inch of that space has been jammed. It has been utterly impossible to procure a ticket here in New York for this particular game. This day before yesterday, it's a complete sellout. And as we gaze here from our lofty perch in the press box, you know, thousands of people are going to be able to see this ball game this afternoon free of charge. All the tenement houses, are all the way from right field out through center and over in left. And thousands of those people are going to be standing in those windows, up on the roof, and on the fire escapes and so forth. They tell me that some of the occupants of those tenement houses are charging as high as a dollar for that lofty perch. It's removed, of course. It's probably 800 feet away from home plate. But they don't care. They couldn't get in the park. And they're mighty happy that they're getting a glimpse of Yankee Stadium. There's a signal. Listen to the applause. The Yankees take the field. Now the umpires are scattering. Major Kurt is adjusting his paraphernalia. You know, the umpires wear their shin guards under their trousers and also their chest protector. They're in a very dangerous spot. Now, one of the fine things of this game, nobody has received any particular injury, and the managers McCarthy and Terry are able to start the lineup that they started in the first game. Bump Harvey is out there now, and he tosses the first practice pitch to his catcher, Bill Dickey. Joe Moore, giant left fielder, who will lead off, left-hand batter, now walked out of the dugout, and there it is, play ball, Moore is in the box, Hadley starts his lineup, and the ball game is on, here it is, a strike, he swings hard and misses. That was Joe Moore, left-hand batter, left fielder of the Giants, leading off this afternoon before this tremendous crowd here at Yankee Stadium, and the first pitch of Hadley is a swinging strike, the windup. There's a drive, it's foul. Terrific drive down left field. It turns into the open boxes. And there's a scramble on for that old ball. Pushing each other around. A little bit cooler out here today, in spite of the fact that it's a very bright, ideal baseball day. It is just a little bit cooler than the day we had over at the Polo Grounds yesterday. It's ball one and strike one, and here's the pitch. It's ball two. 2-1 the count. Joe Moore, left field of the Giants, is first up. Strike two and ball one.